Welcome to our podcast, where we dive deep into the latest groundbreaking research. I'm Tom, and with me is my co-host, Jen.
Hello, everyone. Today we'll be exploring a fascinating paper that sheds light on the concepts of rationalizability and cost rationalizability in consumer demand. The title of the paper is Rationalizability, Cost Rationalizability, and Afriyet's Efficiency Index, and it was written by Matthew Paulison and John K.H. Kwa.
This paper delves into the duality between these two important ideas in the revealed preference literature. Rationalizability is the intuitive notion that a consumer's choices can be explained by the maximization of a utility function. But the authors show that there's an equally important concept called cost rationalizability, which looks at the problem from the dual perspective of expenditure minimization.
Exactly, Tom. The researchers demonstrate that these two notions are actually equivalent under certain conditions. They also explore how this duality relates to Afriyet's Critical Cost Efficiency Index, or CCEI, which is a widely used measure of how close a dataset is to being rationalizable.
This is a really insightful paper that not only clarifies the theoretical underpinnings of rationalizability and cost rationalizability, but also provides a compelling interpretation of the CCEI. Let's dive in and unpack this research in more detail.
The paper starts by introducing the basic setup. Imagine a consumer makes purchases of different goods over a series of observations represented by the dataset O equals PT XT T equals 1, where PT are the prices and XT are the quantities purchased at each observation T.
The researchers define rationalizability in terms of a vector of efficiency coefficients E equals et TT equals 1, where each et is between 0 and 1. A dataset O is said to be e-rationalizable if there exists a utility function U that assigns weekly higher utility to the chosen bundle XT than to any other bundle X that is weekly cheaper, in the sense that PTX is less than or equal to ETPTXT.
This notion of approximate rationalizability is really important, because in practice, real-world datasets will rarely be exactly rationalizable. The further E is from the vector of all 1s, the weaker the rationalizability displayed in the data.
Exactly. And to measure this departure from exact rationalizability, Afriyet proposed a very clever metric called the Critical Cost Efficiency Index, or CCEI. The CCEI is the supreme value of E for which the dataset O is e-rationalizable.
The CCEI has a very intuitive interpretation. If a dataset has a CCEI of 0.95, for example, it means that the consumer's observed choices are not exactly rationalizable, but they are close. The consumer is never spending more than 5% above what is required to achieve their utility targets.
The authors then introduced the dual concept of cost rationalizability. A dataset O is e-cost rationalizable if there exists a utility function U such that, at every observation, the chosen bundle XT is the cheapest way of achieving a utility level of at least U, XT. Given the prices point.
Remarkably, the paper shows that these two notions of rationalizability are completely equivalent. If a dataset is rationalizable, then it is also cost rationalizable, and vice versa. This duality is analogous to the famous relationship between Marshallian and Hicksian demand in consumer theory.
The intuition behind cost rationalizability is really compelling. Even if we only observe a subset of a consumer's purchases, we would expect them to be cost-efficient in those observed decisions, in order to maximize the money available for other unobserved expenditures.
Absolutely. And the CCEI can be reinterpreted in this cost-rationalizability framework. If a dataset has a CCEI of 0.9, it means that for any well-behaved utility function, there is at least one observation where the consumer could have achieved the same utility with a budget that was 10% smaller.
This provides a very clear motivation for the CCEI. It's not just an abstract measure of rationality, but a concrete gauge of how close the consumer is to being cost efficient in their observed purchases. It's a powerful tool for understanding the real-world behavior of consumers.
Exactly. The authors also discuss how this interpretation of the CCEI applies not just to observational data, but also to laboratory experiments. A high CCEI indicates the subject is close to being a perfect cost minimizer, which is a reasonable benchmark for rational behavior in a controlled setting.
This paper really elegantly bridges the theoretical foundations of revealed preference theory with practical, intuitive interpretations that can inform empirical research. By elucidating the duality between rationalizability and cost rationalizability, the authors give us a richer understanding of both concepts and their measurement.
Absolutely. It's a nuanced and insightful contribution that sheds new light on a classic problem in consumer demand analysis. The researchers have done an excellent job of making complex ideas accessible and relevant to both theoretical and applied economists.
I couldn't agree more, Jen. This is the kind of work that pushes the field forward while also providing tangible guidance for how to interpret and apply these important ideas in real-world settings. It's a fantastic example of rigorous, impactful research.
Definitely. As we wrap up, the key takeaways are: 1. Rationalizability and cost rationalizability are dual concepts that are equivalent under mild conditions. 2. The CCEI can be interpreted as a measure of approximate cost rationalizability. And 3. This provides a compelling justification for the widespread use of the CCEI in empirical revealed preference analysis.
Absolutely. This paper not only advances our theoretical understanding, but also gives us a richer way to think about and apply these core concepts in economics. It's a fantastic contribution, and a perfect example of the kind of cutting-edge research we love to explore on this podcast.
I couldn't agree more, Tom. This was a fascinating deep dive into an important paper. I'm sure our listeners learned a lot and came away with a new appreciation for the power of revealed preference theory and the tools used to study consumer behavior. Thanks for joining us, everyone.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon with more exciting research discoveries. Until next time, keep exploring the frontiers of knowledge with us. Are you tired of wasting money on inefficient purchases? Introducing Afrit's Efficiency Index, the revolutionary app that helps you maximize your spending.
Using advanced revealed preference algorithms, Afrit's Efficiency Index analyzes your shopping habits and tells you exactly how much you could be saving. It's like having a personal cost-minimizing shopper in your pocket.
Just sync your accounts, and Afrit's Efficiency Index will crunch the numbers. It'll even suggest alternative products that'll give you the same utility for less dough.
Stop being a suboptimal consumer. Download Afriat's Efficiency Index today and start spending like a true economic agent. Available on the App Store and Google Play.
Afriat's Efficiency Index. Because your wallet deserves to be as rational as you are.
Your purchases will never be the same.
Welcome to the Research Rundown, the podcast that investigates cutting-edge research with depth and intrigue. I'm Tom, and joining me as always is my co-host Jen.
Hey everyone. Today we're diving into a fascinating paper on a topic at the forefront of finance and mathematics: robust option pricing using multi-marginal martingale optimal transport.
The title of the paper is Computation of Robust Option Prices via Structured Multi-Marginal Martingale Optimal Transport. And the authors are Lynn Engstrom, Sigrid Kalblad, and Johan Carlson.
This paper presents a novel computational framework for solving a class of multi-marginal martingale optimal transport problems, which have major implications for robust pricing of exotic financial options.
Martingale optimal transport problems are notoriously difficult to solve computationally, but the authors here have found a way to exploit the structure of certain payoff functions to make the problem much more tractable.
That's right, Tom. The key insight is that by extending the state space and identifying the problem with a certain sequential martingale structure, the authors are able to leverage recent advances in solving structured multi-marginal optimal transport problems more efficiently.
Essentially, the authors show that many robust pricing problems of large financial interest, like pricing lookback options, Asian options, and barrier options, can be formulated as multi-marginal martingale optimal transport problems. And their new computational framework allows them to solve these problems much faster than previous methods.
Exactly. The classical approach to pricing exotic options is to start by assuming a specific market model. But the authors here acknowledge the uncertainty around the true underlying market model. Their goal is to compute robust and model-independent bounds on option prices when there's uncertainty about the market.
To do this, they restrict to market models that are consistent with given market data, like prices of liquid traded options, and respect fundamental market principles. This leads them to a multi-marginal martingale optimal transport problem.
And that's where their new computational techniques come into play. By extending the state space and identifying the problem with a sequential martingale structure, they're able to exploit recent advances in solving structured multi-marginal optimal transport problems using entropic regularization.
The key innovation is that they combine this entropic regularization approach with methods that leverage the specific structure of the payoff function. This allows them to obtain an efficient algorithm for solving these multi-marginal martingale optimal transport problems, even when the number of marginals is large.
Right? And they demonstrate the power of their method by using it to compute robust price bounds for a variety of exotic options, including lookback options, Asian options, and barrier options. In some cases, they're able to recover known analytical solutions, validating their approach.
But perhaps most impressively, they're able to compute robust price bounds for an Asian option with multiple known marginals, a problem where the optimal solution wasn't previously known. Their computational framework allows them to tackle these challenging multi-marginal cases.
Absolutely, Tom. This paper represents a major advance in the field of robust finance. By developing an efficient computational method for solving multi-marginal martingale optimal transport problems, the authors have opened the door to much more robust and reliable pricing of complex financial derivatives.
Definitely. And I think the broader significance here is that this work illustrates the power of combining mathematical finance, optimization, and cutting-edge computational techniques. It's a great example of how innovative problem-solving can lead to substantial real-world impact.
I agree. This is the kind of research that has the potential to fundamentally change industry practices around derivative pricing and risk management. It's exciting to see these kinds of interdisciplinary breakthroughs happening.
Absolutely. Well, Jen, this has been a fascinating deep dive into a really innovative piece of finance and optimization research. I'm sure our listeners have gained a much deeper appreciation for the challenges and importance of robust option pricing.
Definitely. It's been great exploring this work with you, Tom. The authors have made some truly remarkable contributions, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what other applications and extensions of this framework emerge in the future.
Me too. Thanks everyone for tuning in to the Research Rundown. Be sure to subscribe to catch our next episode exploring the latest groundbreaking discoveries. Until then, keep exploring.
See you next time.
And now a word from our sponsor, Robust Options Unlimited.
Are your exotic options causing you exotic headaches? Well, have we got the solution for you?
Introducing Robust Options Unlimited, the one-stop shop for all your robust option pricing needs.
Tired of those pesky market models failing you? Well, with our multi-marginal martingale optimal transport technology, we'll have your option prices locked down tighter than a drum.
Need to price that tricky Asian option with multiple known marginals? Robust Options Unlimited can do it in the blink of an eye. No sweat.
And if you call in the next 20 minutes, we'll throw in a complimentary crystal ball to predict those pesky black swan events. Guaranteed to improve your risk management or your money back.
So what are you waiting for? Contact Robust Options Unlimited today and start trading with confidence. Because when it comes to exotic options, we're the experts in going completely normal.
Robust Options Unlimited, keeping your portfolio safe from mathematical monsters since 2023.
Hello, and welcome to the Cutting Edge Discoveries podcast. I'm your host, Tom, and with me is my co-host, Jen.
Hi, everyone. Today, we're going to dive into an exciting research paper that explores the application of natural language processing in financial risk detection.
The paper is titled Application of Natural Language Processing in Financial Risk Detection, and it was authored by Liang Wang, Yu Cheng, Ao Shang, Jingyu Zhang, and Haowei Yang.
This is a fascinating study that investigates how we can leverage the power of natural language processing, or NLP, to identify and predict potential risks in financial documents and communications.
The researchers start by providing an overview of the fundamental concepts and theoretical foundations of NLP, including text mining methods, NLP model design principles, and machine learning algorithms. This lays the groundwork for understanding how they applied these techniques to the challenge of financial risk detection.
One of the key aspects of this research is the process of text data pre-processing and feature extraction. The team had to carefully analyze financial documents and communications to identify the most relevant linguistic cues and patterns that could indicate potential risks.
Imagine sifting through vast troves of financial reports, earnings calls, and other communications, meticulously searching for subtle clues that might signal an emerging problem. It's a bit like searching for needles in haystacks, but with high-stakes consequences.
Absolutely, Tom. The researchers had to develop sophisticated NLP models capable of parsing this data and extracting meaningful insights. This involved training the models on labeled datasets to recognize the linguistic markers of financial risk, such as specific phrases, tone, sentiment, and even contextual cues.
And the results of their work were quite impressive. The NLP-based financial risk detection model demonstrated excellent performance in both risk identification and prediction. This provides financial institutions with a powerful tool for proactive risk management.
Think about it. Being able to automatically scan through mountains of financial data and quickly identify potential red flags before they escalate into full-blown crises. That's the kind of capability this research enables, and it could have a profound impact on how organizations manage their financial risks.
Exactly, Jen. The implications of this research go beyond just improving risk detection. By leveraging NLP, financial institutions can gain deeper insights into their operations, identify emerging trends, and make more informed decisions.
Absolutely. And the researchers didn't just stop at developing the model. They also considered the broader relevance and potential impact of their work. They recognized that this approach could be applied to a wide range of financial domains, from fraud detection to regulatory compliance monitoring.
It's an exciting intersection of finance, technology, and data science. The ability to harness the power of natural language processing to uncover hidden risks and patterns in financial data opens up so many possibilities for enhancing financial stability and resilience.
I agree, Tom. This research really pushes the boundaries of what's possible in the realm of financial risk management. The researchers have demonstrated the tremendous potential of NLP to transform the way we approach financial analysis and decision-making.
As we reflect on this paper, what do you think were some of the key strengths and limitations of the study?
Well, I was really impressed by the rigor and comprehensiveness of the methodology. The researchers clearly put a lot of thought into designing their NLP models and validating their performance. They didn't just rely on a single approach, but explored various techniques and algorithms to ensure the robustness of their findings.
That's a great point, Jen. And I think another strength was the interdisciplinary nature of the team. By bringing together experts from finance, computer science, and engineering, they were able to draw on a diverse set of perspectives and skill sets to tackle this complex challenge.
Absolutely. The collaboration across these different domains is crucial for driving innovation in fields like financial risk management, where the challenges span multiple disciplines. And the researchers' efforts to make their findings accessible and applicable to real-world financial institutions is also commendable.
You know, one potential limitation that came to mind is the reliance on historical data. While the NLP models demonstrated impressive predictive capabilities, we have to consider how they would perform in truly novel or unexpected financial scenarios that may not be fully captured in the training data.
That's a great observation, Tom. Maintaining the effectiveness of these models as financial landscapes continue to evolve will be an ongoing challenge. Continuous model refinement and adaptation will be crucial to ensure they remain relevant and effective in the long run.
Absolutely. But overall, I think this research represents a significant step forward in the application of natural language processing to financial risk detection. The findings could have far-reaching implications for how financial institutions identify, mitigate, and manage risks in the future.
I couldn't agree more, Tom. This paper really highlights the transformative potential of NLP in the financial sector. By harnessing the power of advanced language processing techniques, we can unlock new levels of insight and predictive capabilities that could profoundly impact the way we approach financial risk management.
Well, listeners, there you have it. A deep dive into the fascinating world of natural language processing and its application in the realm of financial risk detection. This research is a prime example of how cutting-edge science and technology can come together to tackle some of the most pressing challenges in the financial industry.
We hope you found this episode insightful and engaging. Remember to subscribe to our podcast for more in-depth explorations of groundbreaking research in a wide range of fields. Until next time, keep exploring the frontiers of science and discovery with us.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Catch you on the next Cutting Edge Discoveries podcast. And now, a word from our sponsors.
Are you tired of being caught off guard by financial risks? Introducing RiskHound.
RiskHound, the natural language processing watchdog that sniffs out financial dangers before they bite.
With RiskHound's advanced AI, you can say goodbye to those nasty surprises that keep you up at night. Our algorithms will analyze every financial document, email, and even your boss's muttered rants to detect the slightest whiff of trouble.
RiskHound. Because your portfolio deserves a guard dog with an Ivy League degree in finance and a PhD in computer science.
Don't wait for the next big crisis to blindside you. Unleash the power of RiskHound and keep your investments safer than a squirrel's nest in a snake's den.
RiskHound. Safeguarding your financial future, one clever quip at a time.
RiskHound, the financial watchdog with a bite worse than its bark. Get yours today.
Welcome to our podcast, where we investigate cutting-edge research with intrigue and depth. I'm Tom, and joining me today is my co-host, Jen.
Hi there, listeners. We're excited to dive into a fascinating paper that explores a novel approach to dynamic asset allocation. The title of the research we'll be discussing today is Dynamic Asset Allocation with Asset-Specific Regime Forecasts.
This paper introduces a hybrid framework that combines unsupervised and supervised learning to generate tailored regime forecasts for individual assets within a multi-asset portfolio. Unlike traditional approaches that focus on broad economic regimes affecting the entire asset universe, the authors of this study take a more nuanced, asset-specific view.
The key idea is that by identifying and forecasting market regimes for each asset individually, rather than relying on a one-size-fits-all set of economic regimes, the researchers can better capture the unique dynamics and behaviors of different asset classes. This, in turn, allows them to enhance the performance of dynamic asset allocation strategies.
The paper starts by using an unsupervised learning algorithm called the statistical jump model to classify historical periods into bullish or bearish regimes for each asset. These regime labels are then used as prediction targets for a supervised gradient-boosted decision tree classifier, which learns to forecast the upcoming regime using a combination of asset-specific return features and cross-asset macro features.
The researchers argue that this two-step cluster-then-classify approach is particularly effective when dealing with scarce label data, as is the case with unobservable market regimes. By first identifying the regimes in an unsupervised manner, and then training a forecaster on these labels, they're able to leverage the enhanced signal-to-noise ratio of the regime labels compared to direct return forecasting.
A key aspect of their methodology is the tuning of the jump penalty, a hyperparameter in the statistical jump model that controls the persistence of the identified regimes. The authors use a time series cross-validation approach to determine the optimal jump penalty for each asset, aiming to maximize the performance of a simple regime switching strategy applied to that asset.
Once they have the asset-specific regime forecasts, the researchers integrate them into three distinct portfolio construction models: minimum variance, mean variance, and equally weighted. The integration of the regime forecasts into the Markowitz mean variance optimization is straightforward and intuitive, allowing for dynamic asset allocation that optimizes the risk-return trade-off.
In their empirical study, the authors apply this framework to a multi-asset portfolio comprising 12 diverse assets, including global equities, bonds, real estate, and commodities, spanning from 1991 to 2023. The results show consistent outperformance of the portfolio models that incorporate the asset-specific regime forecasts compared to their counterparts that do not use this information.
One of the key strengths of this approach is its ability to capture the distinct market regimes experienced by different asset classes. For example, the researchers illustrate how the regime forecasts for large-cap U.S. equities, U.S. real estate, and U.S. aggregate bonds exhibit unique patterns that align with the specific dynamics of these markets.
The authors also demonstrate the financial implications of the accuracy of their regime forecasts by looking at the performance of a simple 0/1 regime switching strategy applied to each individual asset. This strategy alternates between 100% investment in the risky asset or 100% in the risk-free asset, depending on the forecasted regime, and serves as a useful benchmark for evaluating the predictive power of the regime forecasts.
What I find most interesting about this study is the researchers' shift away from the traditional focus on broad economic regimes and their emphasis on asset-specific market dynamics. By tailoring the regime identification and forecasting to each individual asset, they're able to unlock valuable insights that may have been obscured by a one-size-fits-all approach.
Absolutely. The authors make a compelling case that the nuances of different asset classes can't be adequately captured by a few generic economic regimes. Their hybrid framework allows them to better reflect the unique behaviors and risk-return characteristics of each asset, which ultimately translates into superior portfolio performance.
One limitation of the study that the authors acknowledge is the challenge of providing timely bearish regime forecasts, particularly during periods of complex global events. They note that incorporating more comprehensive data sources could help improve the forecast accuracy and timeliness.
That's a fair point. Forecasting market regimes, especially during turbulent times, is inherently difficult. However, the author's approach of using asset-specific features and tuning the hyperparameters for each asset seems to be a step in the right direction, as evidenced by the consistent outperformance of their portfolio models.
Indeed. By embracing the complexity of asset-specific behaviors, rather than trying to oversimplify them, the researchers have developed a more robust and effective framework for dynamic asset allocation. This study really highlights the value of tailored, data-driven models in the pursuit of enhanced portfolio construction and risk management.
Absolutely. This paper is a great example of how cutting-edge research can blend expert analysis with compelling storytelling to illuminate the nuances of financial markets. It's a fascinating study that challenges the traditional assumptions of regime-based asset allocation and offers a promising path forward for investors seeking to optimize their multi-asset portfolios.
I couldn't agree more, Tom. This paper is a must-read for anyone interested in the latest advancements in portfolio management. The author's innovative approach to regime identification and forecasting, combined with their rigorous empirical analysis, make for a truly insightful and impactful contribution to the field. I'm sure our listeners will be eager to learn more about this exciting research.
Well said, Jen. Before we wrap up, I'd like to encourage our listeners to check out the full paper, which is available online. There's so much more depth and detail to explore, from the technical aspects of the methodology to the broader implications for asset allocation strategies.
Absolutely. This is the kind of research that really pushes the boundaries of what's possible in portfolio management. By embracing the complexity of financial markets and developing tailored solutions, the authors have made a significant contribution to the field. We hope our listeners are as inspired by this work as we are.
That's right. Thank you all for joining us today. Be sure to tune in next time as we investigate another fascinating research paper. Until then, keep exploring the cutting edge of finance and economics.
Thanks, everyone. This has been Tom and Jen, signing off.
Are you tired of your boring one-size-fits-all asset allocation strategy?
Introducing the new Regime Renegades, the only portfolio management system that tailors its market regime forecasts to each individual asset in your multi-asset portfolio.
Using cutting-edge machine learning and a patented cluster then classify algorithm, Regime Renegades identifies and predicts the unique market regimes for your stocks, bonds, real estate, and even your collection of rare Beanie Babies.
No more getting caught off guard by those pesky economic regimes. Regime Renegades knows when your large-cap U.S. equities are feeling bullish, your emerging market bonds are getting bearish, and your priceless Rottweiler Beanie Baby is about to enter a state of pure euphoria.
Don't settle for one-size-fits-all portfolio optimization. Regime Renegades Dynamic Asset Allocation for the Discerning Investor.
Regime Renegades, because your assets deserve to be treated as individuals. Tom and Jim Renegades, the future of portfolio management is here. Regime Renegades, tailored forecasts for your tailored portfolio.
Welcome to the Cutting Edge Discoveries podcast, where we dive deep into the latest research that's pushing the boundaries of science and technology. I'm Tom, here with my co-host Jen.
Hello everyone, and thanks for tuning in. Today, we'll be taking a closer look at a fascinating paper out of California titled California Community Colleges, Designing Mentoring Networks for Access to Social Capital.
This study, conducted across 5 California community colleges, explores how integrating near-peer mentoring programs into course instruction can help first-generation, low-income, and underrepresented students build the social capital they need to succeed in college and beyond.
The key question the researchers wanted to answer was, can formalizing mentorship as part of the curriculum, rather than relying on optional standalone programs, be an effective way to expand students' social networks and access to resources?
To investigate this, the team worked closely with faculty at Reedley, Porterville, Solano, Glendale, and West Hills Community Colleges, all Hispanic-serving institutions that predominantly serve first-generation and low-income students. Over the course of 2 phases, they embedded an 8-hour near-peer mentoring program into various business, entrepreneurship, and agriculture courses.
The program was designed to do a few key things. First, it aimed to boost students' self-efficacy, their confidence in their own skills and competencies. Second, it sought to expand their occupational identities by exposing them to new career paths through near-peer role models. And third, it tried to help them build social capital by facilitating meaningful connections with their peers.
What made this mentoring program unique was its integration into the actual course curriculum, rather than being a standalone, opt-in activity. Students were assigned both a mentor and a mentee, creating a reciprocal learning relationship. The mentoring sessions were woven directly into the class schedule, with dedicated time set aside for peer-to-peer interactions.
The researchers used a mixed methods approach to evaluate the program's effectiveness. They collected quantitative data through pre- and post-surveys, measuring things like self-efficacy, occupational identity, and social capital access. And they gathered qualitative insights through open-ended responses and interviews with the participating students.
And the results were quite compelling. Across all the colleges and courses, the team saw a consistent 3-7% increase in students' self-efficacy around their skills and competencies. As one student from Reedley College shared, as a field worker at a farm, aspiring to be self-employed, I barely knew Taylor, who is in my class. I selected Taylor to be my mentor. Like me, she is a Promise program student who enjoyed writing, but unlike me, she was self-employed in sports promotion. I was surprised to find that marketing and promotion could be a path to self-employment.
The impacts on social capital and occupational identity were a bit more variable, with some colleges seeing more significant gains than others. But the researchers noted an important trend. The students who had never had a mentor before, which was the vast majority, seemed to particularly benefit from the program.
As the authors point out, this speaks to a crucial gap in higher education. While colleges do an excellent job of teaching technical skills and knowledge, they often fall short when it comes to helping students build the social networks and cultural capital needed for upward mobility. And this gap disproportionately impacts first-generation, low-income, and underrepresented students.
Exactly. As the researchers note, colleges play a significant role in teaching, developing skills and knowledge in a discipline. Concurrently, colleges also significantly expand the tacit and implicit knowledge necessary for their students' upward mobility through friendships, which are their social capital. there is an opportunity for colleges to develop economic connectedness across CS among their students to support post-secondary economic outcomes.
This study offers a compelling model for how colleges can start to bridge that gap. By embedding mentorship directly into the curriculum, they can ensure that all students, not just the most savvy or well-connected, have the chance to build the relationships and social capital that are so crucial for success.
And the cost-effectiveness is quite striking, too. The researchers estimate that the average cost per student for a traditional opt-in mentoring program can range from $2,500 to $10,000. But by integrating it into existing coursework, they were able to reduce that to just $10 per student. That's a game changer in terms of scalability and accessibility.
Absolutely. This is a really innovative approach that has the potential to make a big impact, especially at community colleges that serve such a crucial role in providing access to higher education for underrepresented students. By democratizing mentorship and making it a core part of the learning experience, these institutions can truly level the playing field.
You know, what I find most compelling about this research is how it gets at the heart of the socioeconomic inequities that persist in higher ed. It's not just about imparting knowledge. It's about empowering students with the social capital and professional networks they need to thrive. And by embedding that support directly into the curriculum, the researchers are really tackling that challenge head on.
Absolutely. This work not only has important implications for community college students, but it also speaks to broader questions about the role of higher education in addressing systemic barriers and inequities. If colleges can become more intentional brokers of social capital, they have the potential to truly transform lives and communities.
Definitely. This is the kind of innovative, student-centered research that gets me really excited about the future of higher ed. I can't wait to see how these mentoring models evolve and get scaled up to reach even more students in need. It's a powerful reminder that education is about so much more than just academics. It's about opening doors, building connections, and empowering people to reach their full potential.
Couldn't agree more, Jen. This has been a fascinating deep dive into some really impactful work. I'm left with a lot of optimism about the possibilities when we start to rethink traditional approaches to student support and success. It's a great example of how rigorous research can translate into real-world impact. Thanks for joining me today. This has been a wonderful conversation.
Absolutely, Tom. Thank you all for listening. We hope this episode has given you a deeper appreciation for the power of mentorship and social capital in higher education. Be sure to tune in next time as we explore more cutting-edge discoveries that are shaping the future. Until then, keep learning and keep curious.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Social Connect, the mentorship network for community college students.
Are you a first-gen, low-income college student struggling to build the connections you need to succeed? Well, Social Connect is here to change that.
With our near-peer mentorship program, we'll pair you up with a student who's been there, done that. They'll share their secrets for navigating campus, discovering your dream career, and making friends.
No more awkward mixers or empty LinkedIn requests. Social Connect is mentorship built right into your class schedule. It's like having a big sibling to show you the ropes.
So what are you waiting for? Upgrade your social capital with Social Connect. Because who needs student loans when you've got a lifelong network of support?
Social Connect. Leveling the playing field, one mentorship at a time.